It's an old Irish phrase, you know, don't buy a dog and bark yourself. If you're going to bring an expert in and you're going to train, you're going to invest them, encourage them to do the thing that they're good at rather than interfering.
This is a big book, Jaime.
Very big.
It's a textbook. Game Changer, The Art of Sports Science, Dr. Fergus Connolly, in my hands right now. Fergus Connolly is one of the world's leading experts in team sports and human performance. He's the only coach to have worked full-time in every major league around the world. He's helped teams win at the highest levels with integrated applications of best practices in all areas of performance. He served as a director of elite performance for the San Francisco 49ers, sports science director with the Welsh Rugby Union, performance director and director of football ops for the University of Michigan football team, mentored, advised coaches, sports staff, players in the NBA, Major League Baseball, NHL, Australian rules football, international cricket. He's also trained world boxing champions and advised elite military units and companies across the globe, keynote speaker and consultant to high-performing organizations. He's written a ton of books. I have three of them in front of me right now. One is 59 Lessons, Working with the World's Elite Coaches, Athletes, and Special Forces. And he wrote the book called The Process, with the methodology, philosophy, and principles of coaching winning teams. I want to talk to Fergus a little bit about what he sees, not just in the development process of elite athletes, but also in how you create environments to create the right coaches to do the same. You're gonna definitely wanna listen to this whole episode. Here's Fergus Connolly. Let's bring it in.
So maybe to kick us off, Fergus, I guess what brought you from your start to kind of where you are today? Can you give us a little background? Don't start all the way at the beginning. I don't want to age you, but you know.
Actually, I was just texting with someone. You know, the very first sport that I was involved in was swimming. Yudara Torres, on she was a hero of mine way back because of her longevity. But that was the first sport I was involved in. But playing sport in Ireland, the accent gives that away, but. I was just always interested in sport, but never saw that as a career. So I actually, my first degree was in construction and woodwork teaching. And, you know, I went on, I did a PhD in IT, but my passion was always sport. And, you know, I never thought that I'd end up working in the tech space. So, you know, fast forward, you know, 20 years later, and a lot of my work is in the tech space with leaders, just like you're doing, and helping, you know, align teams, optimize teams, but taking a lot of the experience from sport, just like you have done, just like, you know, Jerry Lynch, others, you know, you take those principles, because what you're trying to do is get a group of really, really talented people. They already can do their job well, create cohesion, create a vision, alignment, and have everybody rowing in the same direction. And the principles are the same in any group. Doesn't matter whether it's a NFL team, whether it's a tech company, whether it's a sales group, you know, whether it's a group of military officers, the principles are going to be the same, because you're still dealing with a human.
You said you were working a lot in tech. I guess, what are the biggest challenges that organizations you're seeing have, right? I mean, we just have this great resignation, quiet quitting, boss loss. I mean, every week is like a new phrase around what's wrong with work. What are those organizations struggling with?
I think you're right. It has changed quite a bit. At the beginning, it was quiet quitting, and then all of a sudden there were, you know, layoffs. I think in a lot of cases, what you have is you've got really talented, capable people, but it's the management and the leadership, you know, of those people becomes challenging, because you need to ensure that people are facilitated, that you're facilitating them to do what they do best. Now, what you need to be able to support them, but you also need to have a vision and alignment. So you've got plenty of teams and groups now who perhaps, you know, have lost some people. And so now there's a restructuring, reorganization. There's a vision needed. There's alignment needed. Motivation, yes. And then getting everybody back on board. So that's being very topical, that's what's happening right now, you know, the end of January, beginning of February, because of you know, what has happened over the last few months. But that's the immediate challenge for people. In the long run, though, it's really about supporting those people, because winning is a people business, and you need to be able to support your greatest asset, you know, the staff that you have.
What do you, if you were to identify what maybe the best organizations that you interact with are doing versus the others that maybe are struggling and not moving so quick, I guess, what is the difference between, and you make a great point, we're in a potential recession, tech firms are laying a lot of people off, they're peeling back, happening a lot of other industries. What are the best organizations doing slightly differently than everybody else?
I think the biggest difference between, let's say, good and bad, if you will, are the better organizations recognize that, you know, I've hired somebody in to do something. They're already very qualified, very experienced. They are an expert. And I use that term. They're an expert at what they do. So rather than micromanaging and jumping in, which is our first gut reaction, is taking a step back and going, okay, what do I need to help them do their job better and support around them, as opposed to getting in and interfering and allowing them grow? Because what you end up doing in the long run is you get frustrated, you're pointing out errors, but you're enabling poor behavior then. Because if you overdo that, well then, and you can't do that for everybody, of course, and now then the team leader becomes exhausted, overwhelmed. Your staff are going, would they ever just let me do, you know, I get it, let me do my... So it's creating that balance between leading and facilitating, leading them in the right direction and facilitating, creating the environment that they can go and do the one thing that they are very, very good at. Now, of course, you know, occasionally there's training needed and from that perspective, but it's really about empowering the person to go and do their job rather than enabling poor behavior.
Your book, 59 Lessons, I mean, it was awesome, right? You talked about all your experience with coaches and special forces and the whole nine. Is there any one lesson that you come to or that resonates most for that you share with coaches and leaders today of the 59?
Well, the one that comes to mind is actually around the topic we're talking about now. It's an old Irish phrase, you know, don't buy a dog and bark yourself. You know, if you're going to bring an expert in and you're going to train, you're going to invest them, encourage them to go and do encourage them to do the thing that they're good at rather than interfering. So the best coaches, the best leaders that I have been around are the ones who, you know, they gently challenge, but they take pride in having their staff do a job well and supporting them. That becomes key when you're trying to build a team that can work well together. And it's also about sharing the wins and losses. One of the best lessons that, you know, that I ever learned from an English rugby coach was don't treat wins and losses any differently. From a cold perspective, you want to investigate your losses, sure, but you also want to investigate why were we successful? I want to replicate that. Because sometimes, you know, the way it is, somebody has a great sales week, sales month, whatever, well done, clap in the back, celebrate, but there's no analysis of, well, what did they do well? What did I do well to support them? And that's where the magic happens, because you want to be able to replicate that. And occasionally you want to look at losses, but don't overanalyze those, because again, there's a careful balance. If you put too much emphasis on it, people become fearful. I don't want to do that. It's like telling somebody, I don't want you to think of a pink elephant. Well, you know what I mean? That's what they're going to do. So you want to really emphasize the things that they do well and support them to fix the things that they can do better. So you've got strengths and opportunities. I don't see them as strengths and weaknesses. They're opportunities to improve.
And again, just even hearing the words you're choosing and given the level of detail in the books, the words that you're choosing as a coach are obviously very important when you're coaching an athlete through a movement or through a drill. Every word matters. And do you see that same correlation when you think about the work environments you're going into and again, I'm gonna say managers in quotes, or you know, leaders in quotes, because just because you have the title doesn't mean you're actually it. Talk to me about those types of systems.
That's a great point as well, and it works both ways as well, because if you know some people that I work with, you want to encourage them to develop leadership qualities before they have the title, you know, so there's a balance. But you're absolutely right. The language that you use is so important. I would even as well, you know, I took a step back as well in terms of listening, as opposed to then, you know, the first job is to listen carefully and to observe, then choose your cues or your words carefully then in terms of how, because it's about eliciting a response from someone. You know, we all see it. You see the coach on the sideline that points out the obvious error to the player. Well, player knows, but can you point out the precursor? Can you perhaps suggest something before they do that? That's what you're looking for. And so choosing to intervene and then choosing your words, so, so important. Absolutely. Particularly with the more skilled person in any walk of life. Because if you're dealing as well with people who are very driven and motivated, which you know most people that are listening to this have, you know, they're already going to start to, you know, critique themselves. So you don't want to state the obvious. You want to be able to coach them to improve, empower them.
And that word coach is interesting, because it definitely feels like in the last bunch of years, the word coach pops up a lot more in business talks. And I mean, there's so many books now that are on the shelves about being a coach instead of a manager. And it's almost like everybody is trafficking in the word coach. And I'm interested, you as an absolutely as a coach, and when you hear the word coach thrown around as much as it's thrown around now in business settings, how do you define what makes a great coach?
Well, so the difference, let's say, between a coach and a manager is in, and this is largely to do with the explosion of skills. So, you know, with the technology revolution, so to speak, now what you have are, you've got so many people who will end up working for you or that you will lead, who are far more talented than you. So you can't technically manage them, tell them exactly. You want to coach them to continue to do way better than you could do. More so today as well, the greatest progress is across paradigms. So even in your organization, or people are listening to this, you've got multiple departments or multiple skill sets that are cooperating and collaborating to produce a result. So you've got all of these experts. Really, your job is to coach them to continue to perform greater than you ever could. Gone are the days of standing over someone, you know, showing them how to improve on a particular task. So that's what a lot of it is. And a lot of it as well is encouraging your staff to continue to learn, to inspire them to learn. You know, when somebody comes into the office, you know, and says, hey, I've just been reading this book, or I've got a great podcast that you've never heard of. Brilliant. That's what you want to encourage, that culture of continuous development, continuous learning.
The one quote that stood out to me in your book that I really liked was, you can't be half pregnant. Was the one that
these are, some of these are Irish colloquialisms. Yeah, so just give the context. Yeah, yeah. Just in case somebody takes it. Yeah, but you have to be completely committed to the event. Now, what's really interesting as well is, as people go through their career trajectory, what you have to help them do very often is to switch on and switch off. So when they are committed, they're fully committed. So back to sport again, the quality of execution is elite. But then when they switch off, that's done. So the quality can be maintained. What you see occasionally with people, particularly when they become anxious or they've got poor leadership or poor management, is the quality will start to deteriorate over time, because you're not helping them switch on, switch off. You know, they're dragging the stress with them. And now over time, that performance starts to deteriorate. So helping managers and leaders understand how to keep the quality at its highest, that becomes very, very important.
Is it harder to develop coaches and coaching traits today? Is it getting harder given connectedness, the environment? You know, I'm happy because I was a millennial, so everybody stopped complaining about us. Now they complain about Gen Z and, you know, hopefully Gen Alpha next. But, you know, I had a conversation with an author the other day who wrote a book called A Nation of Wimps, talking about a generation of young people that were raised in an environment that maybe, you know, produced a mindset that isn't gritty or tough enough to succeed. So again, I want to ask, is it harder than ever to coach?
Well, the first point I always make when people talk about those things is we're the ones who've created the environment for that generation to come into. So it's our fault, if there is any fault. I don't know if it's more difficult. It's just, I just view it as different. So for me, I'm always looking at what's the solution. You could argue perhaps things are more comfortable, whatever. You could make that argument. But because things are different, it's about finding, okay, what keys do I need to press? What things do I need to expose people to so they understand where we're coming from? But there is no doubt that different generations will view things differently. And so helping people understand, you know, even yesterday morning, I was prepping someone for a meeting, and it was largely around, it was around those generational differences. Hey, here are some things that you know, should you consider this before you go in, because that person may be looking at it from this perspective. And what you have is, you know, I call it a backroom bandwidth, to take a sporting analogy. You might have a very senior manager who's perhaps in their 50s. You could have very young staff, and you might be a leader in the middle of that. And so now you've got three generations that you're trying to, you know, take from, manage up, manage down, or manage left and right, whatever way you want to look at it. So I think it's important to be aware of it. I think this new generation coming in, the younger generations, bring some beautiful things, that expressions that are going to blow us away in time. And I think it's more helpful to look at it in a positive sense and go, okay, how can I harness that? And to be honest, that's what you're doing with your work, is, you know, you're ahead of the curve in the sense that you're harnessing that interest and enthusiasm to teach. And so I think that's a more positive approach to coaching and to education and to leadership.
I talked to some, I don't think this is just any group. I don't think it's human resources or it's managers, but there is this knowledge gap today inside of organizations around how learning actually works. How do you actually develop workers? How do I take a new hire and develop them from the back of house to the front of house? And I feel this way because I hear the words, they'll use these terms when they talk about certain workers. They'll say, they'll say, Fergus, this worker is low skilled. Or they'll say they're unskilled. Or, you know, they'll say something to that effect, which, if words matter, I mean, obviously that's not it's not maybe the words you should be throwing around. What are the, you know, I can't stop, help but read Game Changer and come away from just the methodology that's there. But also, you start by talking about kind of coaching from the game first, not so much from fitness, which is coming from the sports performance world, you know, we always think the other, a lot of organizations and environments, and also in workforce, they think about teaching this way first and then transfer is automatic. I guess, how do you think about that methodology? What principles are critical? If I hired, you know, you hired me tomorrow to be, you know, your partner in crime, like what would be the methodology most effective to get me up to speed?
Yeah, it's a brilliant question, and it's a brilliant space, because one can argue never before have we so much information available, yet there is this information gap or knowledge gap. And I think we also occasionally can coach ability out of people. We coach intuition out of them. I think one of the biggest challenges that we have today is that we do have, in some verticals or in some areas, we have a workforce that has only been exposed to a standard structured academic experience. And particularly around, you know, DEI, for example, you're only exposed to a demographic that's largely similar to you. Now you go work in, you go out into the real world and you're exposed to now completely different backgrounds, expressions, et cetera. So I think that's what you're, that's part of the puzzle that that we're dealing with. But taking that phrase, you know, work from the game backwards, when somebody says somebody's unskilled or whatever, no. They've got a lot of skills. You just haven't recognized which ones you can optimize. And then you then support again and provide, you know, auxiliary support. So we can all improve, but you have to recognize, first of all, what that person is bringing to the table. One difference, you know, going way back to coaching, you know, many coaches had a qualification outside of sport or a career outside of sport before they got involved. You know, if you go back to Bill Walsh, et cetera, you know, but that it wasn't necessarily the education, it was experience dealing with people very often. Now, very often now you've got people who've maybe spent 7 or 8 years in one academic institution without exposure to lots of different experiences, walks out. So that's something that you have to support and encourage to create this robust, resilient person who's, you know, going to thrive under your leadership.
So I have a 5-year-old daughter, coach, and she is, my wife played college soccer. You know, I was okay. I was not, you know, I was a long snapper. So I was there. She just started playing. You know, we just signed her up for, you know, kind of about a year ago to her first round of soccer. And I stood as far away from the field as I could, as a sane parent, and stayed out of the coaching and out of everything. What recommendation and advice do you have for me as a parent, as I am trying to develop a young person into not the next great professional athlete, but into, you know, again, into a great person in the community? Any advice for me as I navigate the coaching field from the other side?
No, when I go to watch my friends, you know, sons and daughters play a sport, I do the very same thing. You know, I stand back and certainly stay quiet and watch, observe. And honestly, you know, for me, it's largely watching the reaction and supporting. Very often, to be honest with you, it's balancing, you know, the comments, some of the coaching cues or the shouting that you'll hear. And it's supporting them so that, first and foremost, particularly at that age, that they enjoy it. And that's the same at work. You know, people, listen, they're going to be tough days, but you don't want people dreading coming to work. You don't want your daughter dreading going to sport. You want them to enjoy it. And, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, it's way too young to form, an opinion about the sport other than to be able to go and express themselves and enjoy it. So I think I would be very proud of you, the way you're starting her on her career.
Fergus, I appreciate it. We have one final question for you. What is your hope for the future of work?
Hope for the future of work. I think that what I enjoy the most, and what I enjoy seeing in, you know, in the people that, you know, the leaders that I work with, is seeing them recognize the beauty and the talent that people are coming in with, as opposed to, as you alluded to earlier, looking for the things that are missing. And allowing those grow with support. And, you know, if I have a hope, it's that more and more leaders will start to do that. They'll start to recognize this person is bringing something truly unique, and I can do something with that. I can harness that and I can develop it, as opposed to looking at what's missing. And, you know, today is Thursday. What was it? Was it Wednesday? Yesterday morning, great Tom Brady retired. You know, you could sit there and look at Tom Brady coming out of University of Michigan and point all the things that he wasn't able to do, but you had a coach, Bill Belichick, was able to spot the things that he was really good at and develop those, again, facilitate greatness.
Sure. Fergus, thanks for your time. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Ton of takeaways from this one. Fergus talking about the fact that with generational differences, he's being proactive, looking for solutions, not maybe hanging around and just complaining about the situation or the way you perceive a situation. I love the fact that we talked about, since there's been a skill explosion, so fascinating, it's true, that most players may be better than you in this sports environment. It's no different in our workforce, whether you're in a restaurant, a retail brand, a sports brand, you're in a healthcare environment, financial services environment, all these environments, you may be in and around people whose skills vary or are better than you, and it comes down to how you execute, and that comes down to, like Fergus said, the quality of coaching. I liked how he went deeper in talking about, as coaches, we have to gently challenge and take pride in our staff and support them. But I think of everything he said, even talking about not treating wins and losses any differently, which I think is a huge takeaway for many of the managers out there who struggle day to day by focusing on metrics and not focusing on the process, which Fergus has a book on. But my number one takeaway was his comment around people have skills, but maybe you just haven't recognized their skills. And it's our responsibility as talent leaders, it's our responsibility as business leaders to create the right type of environment where skills can thrive, where they can move in the right direction. In Fergus's book, The Process, he says this: high-level performers will execute based on the instincts they've developed and their ability to anticipate what's about to happen in high pressure situations. Actions are dictated by habit. If inside of your organization, you are not getting the actions out of your people that you expect, I would challenge you to reconsider the way in which you are developing the skills that form the habits of your people. Are they heading in the right direction? That's Fergus Connolly. That's this episode of Bring It In. Now don't forget to subscribe to Bring It In so you never miss an episode. We've got some awesome guests lined up that you're not going to want to miss. Now, back to work.